Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I sat down with composer John King when he was in Philadelphia working with longtime collaborator, choreographer Kevin O'Day, on a new dance for Ballet X. John King has composed for many different instruments and ensembles. I asked him what was different about composing for dance.
Well, that's a good question. And I don't mean to have this sound provocative, but I often think I've never written dance music. I don't write music for dance. I mean, I write music that is music. When working in collaboration with people, I listen to the collaborative model and what the collaboration is going to become, what things are necessary for me to do and what things are open. Kevin and I think we've developed a really interesting way of combining different methods of bringing sound and movement together. That is, sometimes in his work, he'll need certain landmarks from me. He'll need certain timings. He'll need rhythmic elements that are fixed and secure. But then at the same time, we also have agreements about when things are completely open and when things are, we just say, this is the way it begins and we'll leave it for 5 minutes and then we'll come back together after 5 minutes, so that what happens in between is up to him in terms of movement, it's up to me in terms of the sound.
And are you exploring the same philosophical idea?
Well, we talk about qualities, we talk about energy, but that's about the piece in general, not moment to moment so much. Moment to moment is we trust each other. I think that's why we've worked together for 20 years. Yeah, we trust each other. Sometimes I send him the music up front and he listens to it and goes from there. Sometimes we wait until very close to the premiere for the music to come together with the dance.
So, for example, let's talk about time curves.
Mm-hmm.
How did this come about and what was in your head when you started composing it?
Well, the commission came from Ballet X, and I'm very honored to be working with them for the first time. They asked Kevin to do this piece that would be at the end of a program. So I took that as my cue to have something that had some rhythmic vitality and some drive and some kind of propulsiveness to it. Kevin was saying that he thought that the piece should be around 25 minutes, and I thought I couldn't find it in myself to sustain something pulse-driven for 25 minutes and have it retain or have it achieve a kind of climactic, cathartic ending. So I thought, well, I will space out within that time period moments of rhythmic energy with moments of pure space, so that when the rhythmic energy comes back, it feels even more propulsive to me. If I listen to a pulse for too long, I stop listening to the pulse. I want to hear something different, so that when the pulse comes back in again, it's something fresh and has a kind of a momentum that's building up. So I had that be my model, and I ran it by Kevin, my thoughts about durations. Like, there is a kind of an opening that's a bit like an overture in the traditional sense, that it has little fragments of music that is going to come later on in the piece. And this is where the title comes from, Time Curve. So there's a little bit at the beginning that's going to be, we're going to hear later. And then it goes into some very open-timed sections. And then there's something pulse-driven, and then back to something open-timed. And then at the end, there's one long movement that's very pulse-driven. And the way the electronics work in this piece is that the electronics are capturing bits of the material that the cellist is doing and retaining that and prolonging that further in time, so that the cellist moves on to new material, but the electronics has captured something that kind of keeps the past, in a way, still present.
It's kind of like a reverberation that continues. I mean, if you think about it in terms of like an organ plays and you keep hearing it afterwards.
Yes, if you think about the reverberation in a church or some resonant space, that something is played very loudly and then it continues. And then if something was played live very softly with the reverberation of what happened before, it would be like that. There would be two different moments of time happening simultaneously. That was the idea of it.
So the electronics are recording as the cellist is playing?
Yes, and the cellist doesn't know, nor do I know, nor does Kevin know, what it's being recorded. It's a chance-determined electronic environment where it could pick up a small chunk of what she's playing, it could pick up a longer chunk of what she's playing, and then it processes it and spatializes it in the theater in different ways that I set the limits of it, but I don't know exactly what's going to happen when.
Does that mean that every rehearsal is different, every performance is different in terms of what sounds are in the theater?
They will be slightly different, yeah. The cello part is the fixed, determinate part of the music, but the electronics kind of widens or narrows or extends or grabs onto and continues always a different material.
So you weren't thinking about dancers moving at all when you were composing this, or you were?
Well, I was thinking about giving Kevin some of the things that I know he likes. Like he likes odd numbers of beats. I remember he told me this a long, long time ago. That is 11s and 13s. And because the way he described it to me, and maybe he's changed his thinking on it, but the way he described it is that if he does the same movement twice, but the number of beats is odd, then the dancer has to begin with one foot on one phrase and the other foot. It shifts the emphasis by having to begin on the left foot, whereas the last time you did it, you began on the right foot. Then everything looks different and changes and has a different perspective. And so I did think about that, especially with the pulse-driven stuff. And a lot of the music, in fact, one of the early pieces that we did together 20 years ago was a piece called Hardwood. And there was a big part of it that was sort of a blues or gospel-driven thing. So part of the music towards the end of this piece is a very blues-driven cello part.
And you call it Time Curves again. Why?
Well, I was trying to think about ways that music could foreshadow the future, as I was talking about with the opening overture-type movement, that it's a little bit of something that's going to come down the line further on in the piece, but the electronics could have grabbed that material and will be playing that material at various times during the piece, so that's extending the past into the present of what Wendy's doing, and sometimes the cellist is doing, and then sometimes foreshadowing what's coming to what's about to come further on down the line. So I was just thinking about different ways of time. Like if you imagine the cellist is going at a certain pace and she continues forward, but the electronics take what she's done in the past, it sort of spins off. I think of it as curving off in a different direction. So something is held from the past while something else is going forward. So that's why I was called it Time Curves.
Well, that's cool. Well, thank you so much for coming in and talking about this.
You're very welcome. It's been a great pleasure.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.